welcome to JS on Politics. I'm your host, Greg Borowski. As promised, we have new poll numbers to discuss today and a visit by one of the presidential candidates, though probably not one of the two you're thinking of. Let's take a look at what's ahead on today's show. Another day, another presidential poll, this one tighter than the last one. We could say the same thing in the U.S. Senate race. We'll get behind those numbers. That presidential candidate visiting tonight, Libertarian Gary Johnson, who is he and how will he affect the race? Next, we've got an indicted strip club owner, an NPD man of the year, and a lawmaker arrested. Just another week in local politics. We'll also give you our winners and losers. And as always, we'll take some viewer questions, so please send those in. But we'll begin with a taped segment looking at the presidential race. We're joined now by Craig Gilbert, our Washington bureau chief, to take a look at the presidential race and how it's shaping up here in Wisconsin. And we have new poll numbers out from the Marquette Law School poll. So let's start with those numbers, Craig, and then I'll get your take on them. So when you look at the registered voters in the presidential race, Hillary Clinton is leading Donald Trump 42% to 37%. That's a narrowing from the last poll. When you look at the likely voters, it's an even closer race there. Hillary Clinton 45% to Donald Trump 42%. So, Craig, take us behind the numbers a little bit. What's changed in order to drive that change? Are there certain groups that have, you know, moved or what?
Well,
what's going on?
Some things have changed and some things haven't. Likely voters are going to bounce around a lot because it not only depends upon shifts in public opinion, it depends on who is saying they're going to vote. So sometimes just changes in intensity and interest can drive those likely voters around. They bounce around a lot. Registered voters actually gives us a better idea long-term of public opinion. And what we're seeing is the race is essentially back to where it was before the conventions. I mean, 40, you know, low to mid-40s for Clinton, mid-30s to high-30s for Trump. That's where it was in June. That's where it was in July. The only real anomaly was Clinton's bump after the Democratic and Republican convention. So there is some stability in this race. And right now, the main reason that Hillary Clinton is leading is that she's getting more loyalty from Democratic voters than Trump is getting from Republican voters. So Trump's big challenge at the moment is improving his numbers with voters in his own party. He's kind of flatlined there, and he's not quite where Clinton is, and that's a big deal.
All right, let's look briefly at where these other voters are going, because tellingly, neither one of them is above 50% in the polls. When you look at the other two candidates out there, the main ones, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian, and Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, it lines up 41 to 38, Hillary and then Trump, and then Gary Johnson, 10%, Jill Stein, 4%. Are those numbers from Johnson and Stein significant, Craig, in terms of how they may shape the race?
They could be if it's close enough. I mean, right now they're not changing the outcome, but if it's close enough, it could really matter. And you're right to note that there's a lot of weakness we've seen throughout this summer in the polling in Wisconsin for both candidates. One sign is their high negatives, and they're both high. But the other sign is the fact that neither one of them is really coming close to 50%. If you look at registered voters, Trump has never been above 37% in the Marquette polling this year, and Clinton has only been above 43% once, and that was in her post-convention bump. So both of them are just struggling to get anywhere near 50% with these voters, and that's why you're seeing a lot of voters say either neither candidate or going in some cases to the third party candidates.
All right, let's look at a couple issues, one on each side where it kind of gets to where the candidates have been moving around and maybe gets to some of these issues. So Donald Trump in the last week or so has had, you know, his position on immigration, which was a very strongly worded, very direct position on a wall and keeping folks out and deporting them, and he's maneuvered and moved around a little bit on that. Is that potentially hurt him, Craig, with his most loyal supporters to be seemingly going a little bit softer on that issue?
You know, it could hurt him in a more indirect way, which is just reinforcing questions among voters about what he really stands for. If you're a conservative voter, is he a consistent conservative? If you're just a middle-of-the-road voter, you know, concerns about the volatility and all the pivoting. I talked to a lot of voters in Wisconsin last week. This is a big frontline concern of theirs, even among Republican voters. So I think there's the concern. You know, it's kind of interesting. It sort of reminds you a little bit of Scott Walker's struggles on immigration when he ran for president late last year. He was all over the map on immigration, partly because it was an issue that he didn't have a whole history on as governor. But it tells you that it's a hard issue for a lot of candidates, a lot of politicians, including Republicans, because it's possible to kind of sort of go too far right, and it's also possible within the Republican Party to be seen as too soft. It's a very delicate line.
All right, and on the other side, with Hillary Clinton, she's spent the last week or so dealing with questions about the Clinton Foundation, access to her at the State Department, more email questions. Does this drive at the kind of the trust issue that folks have with Hillary Clinton?
It does, and one thing we saw in Clinton's case in the Marquette polling is that after that post-convention bounce, her favorability numbers or ratings were dropped right back down again where they've been all year. So maybe the last poll was an anomaly. She's struggling. She's struggling on trust. There was a focus group that I attended in Brookfield last week with voters, a dozen voters in the Milwaukee area that had voted at least once for either party in the last four presidential elections. And it was not a pretty picture for either candidate, but the numbers, the perceptions, the comments, the rhetoric, the language that these voters used about Hillary Clinton and trust and credibility was pretty harsh and pretty intractable.
All right, and finally, let's touch on a story that's coming up, really, this the start of a series across the USA Today network looking at key counties in the presidential race. You've helped crunch a lot of numbers for that, and we're leading off with a look at Waukesha County, which our folks here are familiar with. But tell those who are watching why Waukesha County is so interesting in the context of this presidential race.
So Waukesha County is kind of a microcosm of that base Republican vote. It's a you know, it's a pretty unusual county in some ways. People turn out like crazy. It's very Republican. But it has a lot of things in common with other high turnout Republican counties around the country. These are counties where a Republican candidate like Donald Trump needs a big turnout. He needs a one-sided vote. Right now, he's struggling to get that. He's struggling with Republican voters. He's only getting like 80% in Wisconsin with Republicans when Hillary Clinton's getting 90% with Democrats. And when you talk to Republican voters in Waukesha, which is the most important Republican county in Wisconsin, there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of frustration over their choices. A lot of people haven't been sold on Trump yet. He needs to maximize his vote in places like Waukesha County to close the gap with Hillary Clinton.
All right, so that series starts next week across the network and including on jsonline.com. So thanks for joining us, Craig. We'll have more next week at this time.
Okay, until next time.
Panel for the first part of today's show, Dan Bice, our Watchdog columnist, Jason Stein, one of our Madison Bureau reporters.
Welcome to Milwaukee.
Well, yeah, usually we have Jason in that little box in the corner. He's a real live, actual person here.
It's great to be here. It would be even better to be out on Morning Dove season, the opener of Morning Doves, but it's great to be here with you guys.
And we were about to say the same
thing.
We're
going to give you some easy targets today. So let's go with Donald Trump and his immigration speech yesterday and his visit to Mexico to speak with the Mexican president. What was your general impression, Jason? Did he help him himself with that? Did he hurt himself? How rate score Donald Trump's day yesterday?
I think you can really overthink that question. I think it's pretty clear that he didn't help himself, and I'll tell you why. Because he spent the day, at least partly, talking about whether or not to deport huge numbers of people in the country. If you look even at Republican voters, that in Wisconsin, for instance, Marquette poll yesterday said that only 28% of Republican voters agree with that idea of deportation. So this is even within the Republican Party a minority. He spent the day talking about that. He's kind of in a little electoral prison cell, and he needs to break out of that rather than kind of wander around within it.
But, you know, it's a hard thing when you're running for president. You hear most from the people on the extremes. When you're a liberal candidate or a Democrat candidate, you hear mainly from the liberal people. And it's hard to hear the people in the middle because usually they're not very vocal. And in this case, when Donald Trump was waffling on the immigration issue the last couple of weeks where you weren't really sure where he was going. I mean, you had his defenders like Rush Limbaugh saying, well, we knew all along that he wasn't looking to deport everybody and he wasn't looking to build a wall.
Or at least have Mexico pay for the wall.
Right. But people like Ann Coulter went nuts over his position, and he seems to be speaking mainly to the people on the far right to assure them that during the primary, what he was saying is what he actually felt.
He certainly seemed to need to come and provide some clarity as much as Donald Trump provides clarity after all the moving around and adapting sort of the Bush position or the Marco Rubio position that he criticized. We now know what his position
is. Well, I mean, the hard thing is, his position position was one that helps you win a Republican primary, but his position on immigration is not a great position to be in.
In the general election.
In the general election.
So why talk about it? Why? I mean,
all the time. Because he can't help himself.
Well, clearly. But, you know, the issue is a loser for him, and he spent a very big day devoted to that losing issue.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the other results from the top line results from yesterday's poll. We'll look at some numbers here in the U.S. Senate race. First, with the registered voters, where now Russ Feingold has 46%, and Ron Johnson, the incumbent Republican, came in at 42%. That's a bit of a tightening, as it is with the likely voters, where Russ Feingold had 48% to Ron Johnson's 45%. So, Dan, good news for Ron Johnson, right? I was saying he's got to narrow it at some point. Is this...
I do think it was going to narrow at some point. The thing is, I'm still not convinced, I believe, exactly what the poll says, because on many areas it looked like Republicans did better than they had, and this tightening came during August, which is not a time that most people are very focused on politics. That usually happens in Wisconsin right after Labor Day, where we've had a number of races, including the last gubernatorial race, where things tightened in early September before Walker surged ahead. So, but it is somewhat good news, but the bottom line still is Russ Feingold's ahead by 4 points. I mean, that's the bottom line. He still has to close it some more. And it's been, you know, this week's been an interesting week for Ron Johnson. He's done better than expected in this poll. His super PAC ran a poll that showed that the race is tightening. Yet at the same time, he continues to say some things that, you know, have people scratching their heads. Yeah. One in which he said that he thinks unemployed mothers should go to work at the daycare centers and get jobs there, which I believe the Journal Sentinel won a Pulitzer for writing about that sort of
thing. About the problems when you have women working at the daycare centers where they're... And the problems, what are the problems turn out to be? Fraud is one of the problems.
And then there was this odd story, and I'm not sure what to think of it, about the trust that he has with his kids, saying that if they commit a criminal act or if they have more than one child out of wedlock, that they would be cut off from the trust. It's just, you know, so every time there is a good thing with Ron Johnson's campaign, there's usually a head scratcher.
It's hard, I think, and I want to ask this question to Jason, to pinpoint something that caused the narrowing for that Johnson did something that somehow has made him more popular. Is this just a case of, you know, how much in control is this election for him, or is it going to be these larger factors of who's motivated, who's coming to the polls, sure, who's voting, who's going to show up?
I mean, I think you have to understand that in today's very partisan, nationalized political environment, you're not going to see things in terms of individual races. I mean, it's just not how, in general, politics works anymore. We're seeing that a little bit with Donald Trump, but then he's sort of the exception that proves the rule, right? When you look at all the very unusual things that he's done as a candidate. My only surprise to see a little bit of tightening in this race and other races is that it has taken this long to happen. I've been expecting it for months. I mean, Wisconsin is such a polarized state that it's just, I think it was inevitable that you're going to have a certain number of Republican voters who are disaffected by Trump come home for Johnson. And I think one thing that is at least good for him is that he seems to be outperforming Donald Trump a little bit, even though voters are not very familiar with who Ron Johnson is in Wisconsin. But at the end of the day, as Dan said, he's still behind. It's still going to be difficult for him to overcome that gap.
You know, looking at the poll, there were several questions that came to mind. There's one, it showed Johnson up by significant margins in Green Bay. And so I had questions about that. And then two, the question you raised, what did Ron Johnson do to make it a closer race? And he's not really done much since the last poll. The same is true with Scott Walker, whose numbers bumped up from 38% to 43%, the first time since the spring that he's been over
43%. And his disapproval, that was his approval number. Even more striking was his disapproval number, which dropped, you know, by even more
significantly. But he's not really done anything to cause that change. I mean, if you're in Madison, have you seen him?
No, I mean, he has toured flooded areas in the north of Wisconsin, and he did take a role in the response to the recent civil unrest in Milwaukee. But again, I think in today's nationalized climate, it may be a mistake to look for things that the candidate has done to change their poll numbers, as opposed to just looking at nationally, you saw the presidential race tighten a little bit. I think Republicans are just coming home a little.
I do think he tends to do better. Walker does better when he's more visible. I think, you know, between elections, he sometimes declines in his numbers, but then during the election years, when he's out there and it looks like he's doing stuff and is active, his numbers tend to rise.
All right, I think we'll leave that there for right now. We're going to talk about someone else who needs to get some a rise and increase in the polls. So this tape segment is about Gary Johnson and his visit to Milwaukee this afternoon and evening. We're joined now by Bill Glauber, one of our political reporters. And, Bill, you've been covering all sorts of things this election season. But today, and we're covering and looking at the Libertarian candidates, and Gary Johnson, the candidate for president, is in Milwaukee tonight. Tell us a little bit about Gary Johnson, William Weld. Who are these guys?
They are two ex-GOP governors, moderates. Johnson was the governor of New Mexico, and Weld was the governor of Massachusetts, and they've joined up on the Libertarian Party ticket. Johnson, you know, is a longer-time Libertarian, and he had to drag Weld, not kicking and screaming, but they had to drag him across the finish line when they had the nominating convention. It took a second ballot to get Weld on the ticket with Johnson.
Yeah, and what are they running on? What's their main thrust of their platform? Because there's a little more attention to them this year, perhaps, than in the past, because, you know, Donald Trump has had problems with some Republicans. This may be a safe harbor for them. But what's the thrust of their campaign?
You know, basically an old-style Jeffersonian democracy, the government that governs least, governs best kind of attitude, free markets. Actually, they're one of the few around who say the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a great deal and a bedrock of American policy going forward. I'm not so sure that'll win them a lot of votes in Wisconsin, but, you know, that's what they stand for, and that's what they're going for.
Yeah, and in the Marquette poll yesterday, they had Johnson had roughly 10%-ish, you know.
Yeah.
It made it to double digits, but is that going to be enough to get them onto the debate stage and get them really into the national, you know, forefront?
The key is they really have to get on the debate stage, the three presidential, one vice presidential debate in the fall. They have to go over a threshold of 15% in five national polls. They're not there. The latest sort of compilation of the polls showed them at about 7.88%. So they've got a ways to go, but you never know in this crazy topsy-turvy year what's going to happen.
Right. Well, in 1992, if you roll back the clock, when Ross Perot was running against Bill Clinton and George Bush, he certainly influenced the result. Are they getting enough support that they can have some impact on the election, even if it's highly unlikely, obviously, that they would win the presidency?
We don't know yet. They seem to be taking from both sides, but we honestly don't know. I mean, who would have thought that Ralph Nader would have swung the 2000 election? I don't think people were thinking that, you know, before Florida. So we just don't know. We know that they are trying to make a credible case. I believe they had a town hall on CNN that was viewed by about 1 million viewers. So they are getting some traction. They are attractive to a certain slice of the electorate. And of course, we do know there is great dissatisfaction with both main party candidates.
All right. Well, that's a good point to leave our discussion for today. So thanks for the update, Bill. All right. We're joined now by Mary Spicuzza, one of our political reporters. And we're going to turn to the strip club with the Sheriff Man of the Year and the Best of Lawmaker. And that's not like a punchline to a joke.
It's a real thing.
Story. It's three different things. So, Dan, let's start with Dan Brostoff, the state lawmaker. And why was he in the news this week? Or Jonathan Brostoff.
Representative Jonathan Brostoff. He was in the news because there are these smattering of protests at Sherman Park, usually late at night. And the other night, there were some arrests, 10 people arrested around 8 o'clock. And then he and others went out there at 10 o'clock. He was passing out gum, he says, and chewing gum. And
talked gum.
Gum, not gum.
I just heard that.
Gum. He was chewing, passing out chewing gum, and talking to people about policy issues, and he says trying to de-escalate the situation. He and a representative from the ACLU were then arrested and held for about 20 minutes, and then when the cops found out who they were holding, they let him go.
All right, so the representative was back at City Hall today, where there's some protests and things. Tell us about that. Mary, you were over there this morning.
Right. So this was the first Common Council meeting since the August recess. So that means the first since Mr. Smith was shot, August 13th, and the first since they released this public safety action plan, which has drawn a lot of criticism. So protesters showed up, a couple dozen showed up, wanting to talk to the Common Council, which they did. They picked a representative. Then the Black Panthers also showed up wanting to talk. They were not allowed to go to the podium and address the crowd, but they did so, they effectively did so from the sides. And then Representative Rostoff was there as the protesters headed to the mayor's office to try to meet with him.
Did he have chewing gum?
He did. They all had packs of gum, and they left packs of gum at the entrance to the mayor's office.
What is the
gum with an M?
Gist of the complaints, that the city is not doing enough, or that they want the tape released, or what is it that they're calling on the aldermen and the mayor to do?
Today, the main focus was on the public safety action plan, which was released last week. We got a draft copy of it, which was then changed a bit to have more focus on community and police relations. But the initial plan was really focused quite a bit on hiring like almost 300 more police officers, 150 sheriff's deputies, boot camp-like boarding schools for at-risk youth, more incarceration, less electronic monitoring. So as you can imagine, you know, someone like Sheriff Clark would appreciate and advocate for those things. A lot of the organizers in the community, not so much. So they really wanted to come out and say, like, this is not what you guys should be recommending. This is not what Milwaukee needs right now. And they also talked about, you know, the Sherman Park situation, and that what the community needs is more jobs, more economic opportunities, more transportation, not just more police officers.
All right, let's talk about another issue at City Hall this week. We talked a bit about it last week, the strip club and the owner, Mr. Ferraro, and his applications and his indictment in this lawsuit. What was the development this week on his background?
So it was interesting. One of the strip club owners, not Mr. Ferraro, but another strip club owner, Michael Rose, who is part of the really prominent Gold Club chain across the country. You might have heard of him. He was actually convicted as part of that case into the whole Russian laundry, money laundering, drug dealing. He pled guilty to more than 100 counts and is actually going to be heading to prison pretty soon. And he said that he was a mentor, that he helped create Silk and mentored some of the Milwaukee folks along the way in creating their strip club. So that was certainly interesting and not something that we had heard.
So is there any expectation at City Hall that Mr. Ferraro will be back with another application, or they just don't want to really deal with that till it comes up, or what's the situation there?
He has said that basically as soon as he got from his check from the city, he would reapply. He has not, but I think that we will maybe see some other folks who may or may not be affiliated with him coming forward to try to open some clubs. Right. And obviously the Buzzdum family, who appears to now own Silk in Middleton, I think that they're keenly interested in still trying to open a strip club.
And the check Mary referred to is from the settlement because the city's blocked his past efforts to be downtown. So
nearly $1 million.
Continues, but yeah. Also the saga continues as Sheriff Clark picks up more
favorite
share awards and accolades and things. Dan, so NYPD, they're giving him the man of the year. But tell us about that.
About a year and a half ago, he decided to start on this campaign where he talked up the importance of police officers and, just like at the Republican convention where he said blue lives matter. This is something he's doing nationally. And so the largest union for the New York Police Department has named him their person of the year, which, to some people is a great thing. And today he gets the award at 1 o'clock and is the keynote speaker. I noted in my column that I wrote about it is the interesting thing is he doesn't get along with the unions here, not at all.
Right, he probably didn't consult with the Sheriff's Deputy Association.
Did not. And the union out there said that this wasn't for his position on labor issues. It was for his defense of police officers around the country and the attention that he's drawn to it. The New York Daily News is very critical of the decision to it for him, calling him not the man of the year, but the man of fear. In an editorial this week.
He's not only defended police officers, he's also called Black Lives Matter, Black Lies Matter.
And it's his criticism of those who are critics of the police that has probably gotten more attention.
The sheriff clearly enjoys the attention and being in the limelight, but what, in your mind, do you think he's hoping to do with that attention? Is he planning to run for a different office? Is he planning to do something different, or is he just enjoying the attention in his current role?
If he were thinking about he's told me in the past the two positions that he would be interested in is mayor, but he took a pass and decided not to run this time. And the other one is running for Congress. And I don't think he thinks he can beat Gwen Moore because he would be in her district. So I don't think there's a larger plan other than just getting the visibility. And I mean, it has worked. He's gotten a lot of attention. He'll have his memoir out next year. And he got one of the biggest applause, you know, from the audience when he spoke at the Republican National Convention this year.
Didn't he want to be a Homeland Security head for President Trump, too, possibly?
That is, you know, if it were...
If he was picked.
Right.
He wouldn't turn it down.
Yeah, so, I mean, there is the possibility of that. And he has been an unabashed Donald Trump supporter since the beginning of this election.
All right, let's go now to our winners and losers of the week. And Mary, I'm going to go with you first for your winner of the week.
Mine is, I'm going to have to go with a couple of Packers who were cleared in the performance-enhancing drug scandal. So we've got Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers. Obviously, there was a lot of talk that they were not being interviewed. And then basically, it sounds like they were interviewed. No red flags were raised. And so we are going to see them on the field.
After Jordy Nelson got a winner last week, you can tell we're ready for football.
Again around here.
Or we just don't have a lot of winners. We have lots of losers around here.
I'm going to have my cheese head next week.
We're going to put you on the spot. Dan, who is your winner?
My winner hasn't really actually done anything, but it's Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, who's going to be here. And he gets the stage. No other presidential candidates here this week. So today we get to see if people in Milwaukee like Gary Johnson. The poll this week with the Marquette poll this week showed that 14% of voters approve of what he's doing, 14% disapprove, and 72% have no idea who he is.
So what's that old quote about like 90% of success is
just showing up? And
so politicians are watching the show to
Woody
be a winner.
Line.
Start by showing up.
So he's doing that.
And we'll you're a loser of the week, Dan.
My loser of the week is Anthony Weiner. He's getting attention for all the wrong reasons. It's not the sort of thing that you want to be in the press for.
Okay, so Weiner as the loser. So we need a little pun here from you, Mary, if you got one. Who's your loser of the week?
I am not going to make Weiner jokes. I would say Alderman Bob Donovan at the meeting this morning. They basically had decided to pick one of the protesters to address the council to raise concerns about the public safety action plan. And then Alderman Donovan objected. They had picked a young African-American woman who was a community organizer and one of the protesters. She was going to address the council. And then he basically said he objected, said that that was unprecedented, and that basically he was concerned that it would be disrespectful to police officers and that why should she be chosen. And I think that there were some other folks who spoke up with concerns about the procedure, but I think most of the council felt like, you know, this is kind of an unprecedented time. When was the last time we had 2 days of violent unrest in a neighborhood in Milwaukee, and maybe giving somebody a chance to speak wasn't a bad idea.
We've got about a minute and a half left, so we're going to get to at least one question here. This is from Jenny. I'm going to ask this to Dan. So given the state of the race, will we have to turn off our TVs until November, or will we miss all the political ads here in the state? What do you think?
I think the polls are showing the race is closer than it is close, so I think we're going to get bombarded with ads. I think we'll get bombarded with ads in the presidential race and especially in the Senate race. So for that person, turn it off. For me, I love the ads, so I'll be watching them.
Parked in front of the TV for the next few months.
He'll just be recording the ads and watching them over and over again.
When will this show be over?
Fast forwards through Modern Family to get to the ads or whatever. So. All right, well, we'll leave our discussion there for this week. We'll be back next week. Hope everyone has a great Labor Day, and we'll get back to the political business next Thursday at noon. Thanks for joining us.